and Americans for the Arts.
WMNF 88.52.
First of all, that what you are doing is monumental. And this is not easy. And you all are literally, with this show, you have literally created something out of nothing. And everybody can't do that. What I think is so unique about you all is that when I'm listening to you all, because there are things that I don't know about your world, you all have a wholly different kind of conversation. You have no ideas what your conversation feels like to my ears. It's so different. Because I don't have the opportunity and hear how you guys philosophize about reality. This is the only place that I get that in my entire life. What you do is significant because I'm not alone in it. A whole lot of folk over 40 years of age don't have that experience. Their kids out of the house and grown. When I think of you all as giving us a perspective on popular culture. Not just what's happening, because Entertainment Tonight will tell us what's happening, but you are also giving us perspective on how it impacts real people's lives. And that's the qualitative difference in what you're doing.
You're about to listen to the Urban Cafe.
Good morning, buenos dias, Tampa Bay. This is Joshua, and you are listening to The Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5, your last local community radio station. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning. We are going to have a wonderful and serious conversation here this morning with a transformational speaker, and I'm really looking forward to this. It's going to be fantastic. And we got Tina in the house. Yes, we do. Hollywood is in the house, bringing that wonderful energy and wonderful smile every morning. We got Claire holding it down.
Good morning, Tampa.
Hello. And then Joe on the board.
Hey, good morning. Good morning.
All right. And like I said, this is Joshua, your host. And so we're in a little bit after our first break. We're going to have a wonderful conversation with Connie Rose, who is a transformational speaker and has gone through some very difficult moments in her life. And she has just absolutely come out on the other side in a very positive way, is trying to affect lives, and she is affecting lives for the better. And we can't wait to have this conversation with her about some very difficult topics that I personally have never really talked about before. And I know Tina's very passionate about this, and Tina will be able to speak to a lot of what she does in the community.
Oh, yes.
And it's going to be fantastic. I really look forward to it. I know Jamal is on his way in. And
yes.
Facebook
late
Live.
Again. Late again.
He's got a baby.
You said it, not
He's
me.
Teething.
It's not
he
an
does
excuse.
Have a baby. He does have a baby.
Oh, whatever.
But we all know who's taking care of the baby.
But real quick, can I give a shout out to Royalty, DJ Royalty? I love this girl from Righteous Temple of Hip Hop. Absolutely love that DJ. DJ Royalty kills
awesome.
It. She was killing it this morning. Yeah. I was in the car like, yeah.
She's not
kudos.
Hearing it. She's not hearing it. But
she's did the darn thing this morning.
She's fantastic. Righteous Temple of Hip Hop, the show right on before ours,
yes.
is a fantastic show. She always has some great guests. And we're giving you a shout out, DJ Royalty. And so I am going to start. So a lot of things have been happening in the news. We'll do a couple quick takes. As many of you already know, Robert Mueller finally turned in his report to Attorney General Barr. And Attorney General Barr, to his credit, immediately released a note saying that as early as possibly this morning, he would be updating congressional leaders on the summary findings of the report. One of the biggest things that came out of the Department of Justice press release was that no further indictments were going to be handed down. That does not mean that's a whole conversation. You know, ultimately, in the world of President Trump's circle, that's a good thing. There's no further people in that circle will be indicted. But we must say that we don't know the findings yet. Mm-hmm. We will hopefully get to know the findings, and the public will. And that there's been 34 indictments. Six people, Trump associates, were indicted among the 34 people. Five of them either pled guilty or were convicted. Mm-hmm. And so this whole no collusion, I get it. But the reality is that there were crimes committed.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and another thing that, you know, a lot of people have been talking about is that the transparency, like they want to know everything and they want things taken care of, like swiftly as far as giving us information, because they talking about, oh, they'll give us the bullet points, but we don't want just bullet points. We want the details. We want the transparency of the whole ordeal. And also there have been a lot of talk about the executive
power or
privilege,
correct?
Yeah. So and that's another thing that's huge conversation, that we're like, no cover up, no hiding, we want to know it all. Yeah. So it's very interesting.
And what Tina's talking about there is that it's ultimately Robert Mueller reported through the Department of Justice, which is Attorney General Barr, who was just actually just started less than a month ago in his position. And Attorney General Barr is technically a cabinet member who reports to President Trump.
Right.
And so, so that's the executive privilege, where they can actually determine what's redacted out of the final report and what's published to Congress. But because it's been going on for 2 years, because it's really been the main news story for 2 years.
22 months,
yeah.
I think this thing has been.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And so there's a lot of pressure to make sure that the vast majority of this report is published, you know, and not redacted in the name of national security,
exactly.
or something of that sort, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, as CBS reported, it's also likely that Mueller will be called before Congress to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And so, CBS News' Paula Reed reported that he would comply with that subpoena. And so, no matter what, Robert Mueller is definitely going to probably face Congress in a public hearing and probably a private hearing, similar to what my attorney Michael Cohen did. And so that's the latest and greatest on that. The reality is that we still don't know what's going on. Some people have speculated that maybe no further indictments were issued because the next possible indictment would be to the president himself.
Exactly.
But the DOJ has a longstanding policy against indicting a sitting president. And so, but yes. We don't know.
Yeah, but that's the point. We don't know.
Yeah.
And we put up with so much. And this is...
It's going to be interesting.
It's another reality show, I'll say.
Yeah. And then that was just one investigation, which had a very narrow focus on obstruction of justice and possible collusion with the Russian government. And but out of that investigation, there's over a dozen other investigations that have come out, including the principal one, which is actually with the Southern District of New York, which is still ongoing. And that one is investigating the Trump Organization, the Trump Foundation, and
everything Trump,
right?
Yeah.
So campaign finance laws that were possibly broken and so forth. And so that's a completely separate investigation that may come down with other indictments.
Yeah, absolutely. That'll take a long time, too.
Yeah. Hopefully not too long. We'll see. So there's a whole, you know, to Claire's point, though, this one took 22 months. So how long is the SDNY going to take them to finish their investigation, right, and come to certain conclusions?
Isn't this a precedent? I've been around. I've seen things like the Watergate issues and things like that. But I haven't seen where the states have filed against these in regard to these criminal charges.
I honestly don't know. That's a great question.
I think this is a new way to deal with it, because they're able to kind of wiggle their way out of trouble when they're dealing with these government investigations, and they've got some sense of protection, whereas by the state, they don't have some of that protection. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be very interesting. Something else that got, you know, obviously because of everything that was going on, it got lost in the shuffle a little bit. But the president also stated that that he is recognizing the Golan Heights as Israeli territory.
Oh.
And so for those of you who don't know, the Golan Heights, I believe it was during the Six-Day War, back in the 70s, was territory that was previously Syrian territory that the Israelis have been occupying since they won the war. And they've never declared it for Israel, but it's been an Israeli territory for a long, long time. And the president of the United States has officially recognized that territory as Israeli land. And that's a huge... repercussions regarding the two-state solution that's been discussed for decades now.
Mm-hmm.
Also regarding just giving, you know, so what's happening here? So this is all happening right before Benjamin Netanyahu, who is actually he's the prime minister of Israel, and he is facing charges by his attorney general for fraud and corruption. And he is coming to the United States to go to a conference. And so this is, you know, a political win for Benjamin Netanyahu, who is a close personal friend, apparently, of President Trump. And so so there's a lot of going on there. And obviously, this is not good for peace talks. You know, so we'll see what happens with that. And then a completely unrelated story as well. The mayor of San Juan, Puerto Rico, has declared her candidacy for the governor of Puerto Rico of 2020. Many of you will remember Carmen Yulín for having a tit for tat with President Trump after the response to Hurricane Maria.
Exactly. I like that.
Yeah, she's fiery. Yeah. She's fiery.
And I like it.
Yeah, she's a. Yeah, a lot of people like it, but a lot of people don't. A lot of people think that she was all bluster and not a lot of action. But the depends on who you ask, right?
Some people think, and watch.
Yeah, just some people think that she's been a great mayor. Some people think that she hasn't. Yeah. For those of you who don't know, San Juan is the most populous municipality in Puerto Rico. And you know, has a lot of power. And so it should be very interesting. She's going to be running against Ricardo Rosselló, who is the current governor, who also decided to run again for governor. He's the youngest governor in the history of Puerto Rico. He was elected, I believe, at the age of 33 or something like that.
Very young.
But his father was a previous governor of Puerto Rico at one point, so the family legacy took him there, in my opinion. But
inside stuff there.
He was dealt a tough hand. Like, Puerto Rico is going through an economic crisis that still hasn't been resolved. That's part of Carmen Yulín's platform to try to, believe it or not, $72 billion of the debt that Puerto Rico has not been audited.
And
and the state legislature is refusing to audit it, basically. And so one of her policy statements when she declared to become a candidate was, we need to audit the $72 billion. Like, is this, you know, how much of this was corruption? You know, if any of it, right?
Oof.
You know,
knowing
my island, possibly a lot of that was corruption.
I was
going to
say most
right?
of it.
We're going to charge you $1 million for this.
Like 99.1% maybe?
Yeah. And so a lot of news going on. I wanted to throw out the Carmen Yulín news because obviously I'm from Puerto Rico and it's near and dear to my heart. So yeah.
We should bring that back. Bring that topic back later at another time to follow up.
We will.
That's something we hear these great stories that are going on. And it's like, I'd like to hear
more
later what's progressed and what's transpired.
We'll definitely keep updating that. That's a very valid point that Clara brings up. And again, you're listening to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. I just put out two big news stories and one local news story to Puerto Rico that I wanted to mention. Remember also that the city of Tampa is still going to have a second round of mayoral elections coming up between David Straz.
Please
and
go out and
Castor.
Vote. Please vote. Please vote.
Use your power.
Yeah, and so that is also happening in the city of Tampa. And with that being said, we're going to jump to our first break of the day. And when we come back, we're going to have a wonderful, very powerful conversation with Connie Rose.
Mm-hmm. Previously on the Urban Cafe...
Cigarette is a drug. It's a drug. When it's processed in a stimulant, anything that's stimulant becomes a drug and becomes a disease to the body. Once you make it singular, you keep it whole, the body know how to use it. Before you make it singular and you process it, it becomes a drug to the body. But they know, if I give you salt, it's going to make you crave sugar. If I give you sugar, it's going to make you crave salt. That's why they put on both the cigarettes. But we just focus on the nicotine, but they don't focus on the sugar that's in cigarettes and stuff like that that make people addicted.
Oh, there's sugar in cigarettes?
They put everything in cigarettes.
That's what
I did not know that.
But what I wanted to say to you, that I had one of my clients has MS. Well, he had MS for 15 years. He came to me, we've been working together for almost a year now. And last month, he got an MRI on his brain. And the MRI showed no signs of MS no more. So I said, the issue is nobody's finding out the cause. We got to go back to find out. And each person have a different cause. And most of them is due to heavy metals like aluminum, mercury, and things like that. He has some mercury from fillings he had in his mouth. I had him get out all those mercury. Then I have packages, herbal packages I put together that help repair nerves and strengthen them back. So he's able to now stand. He's just been in his wheelchair for the last, I think, 7 years. He's able to stand. He now can have movement with his hands again. So basically, the brain, every cell in our body died and reborn again. So no matter what happens, if you change what you put in your mouth, you can change whatever disease that came upon your body.
Hi, this is Angela B. We're back again. The March 23rd Caribbean Cruise Music Festival takes place at Skipper Smokehouse, Saturday, March the 23rd. Live bands include Impulse, Renegade, Jafarai, Trinity 7, Sucker Boys, Spy vs. Spy, Terry Edwards and the Latin Jazz Band, Tassa Drums, African Dancers, Bickley Rivera and Nelson with Island Chill.
Everybody wondering what the world's coming to.
Ghana, Renegade, Gia, Wayne Stutter, Soka Van, The Man, DJ Spice will be our DJ. See you there, 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 there on the 23rd of March 2019 at Skipper's Smokehouse. The doors open at 3 p.m. For more information, go online to WMNF.org or call us here at 813-238-8001.
Support for WMNF comes from our members at the Florida Law Group, protecting the rights of the wrongly injured since 1984. The Florida Law Group is dedicated to creating strong and lasting connections with their clients and our community. More at thefloridalawgroup.com.
Welcome back.
Oh, yeah, man.
I know you like that. I know you like that.
How long you been back?
Back Tampa. Good morning.
Good morning, Tampa Bay. You listen to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. And so for those of you on Facebook Live, we do apologize for the audio issues you were seeing there in the first 15 minutes or so. We believe to have corrected them. And so thank you for your patience there. And so we're going to have a great conversation here this morning. If you want to call in to the Urban Cafe, 813-239-9663. And so we actually have our first caller of the morning. We're going to put you on hold for a moment while I'm going to go ahead and introduce our guest here today. And so her name is Connie Rose, and Connie is a transformational speaker with an amazing story. And Connie, I mean, I won't be able to do it justice to introduce you, so why don't you introduce yourself, please?
Hey, Tampa. How's it going? Yes, so I am Connie Rose. I actually grew up in Tampa, and my story is like so many thousands of others, believe it or not. A little bit different twist. Grew up in an upper middle class family. Went to Catholic school, and no one knew what was going on behind closed doors. No one knew that there was this horrific nightmare that actually my brother and I were experiencing on a day-to-day basis. Family was very much mental, physical, and sexual abuse that was going on in our household. And for about 14 years of my life, I was actually sexually abused by my father, who was a serial sex offender, and then later on became my pimp. Now, a lot of people are going to say, what? Like, a little white Christian girl growing up in an upper middle class family, these things don't happen. Well, that was my thought also. You know, and I thought that I was so privileged and loved that I was a brownie and a Girl Scout, and I danced and I modeled and I was in beauty pageants. Like, how cool was that? Because we weren't a wealthy family. Little did I know that it was the whole grooming process. Little did I know that it was a way to market me, because this is in the 70s, to market me for what was next. And what was next was for me to become a prostitute. Now, I'm only going to use that word once, because children do not grow up to be prostitutes. No. Children cannot be prostitutes. Children can be prostituted. And for the next 4 years of my life, that's what I lived.
Wow. From what ages to what ages specifically?
The sexual abuse was from 2 to just before my 16th birthday.
Wow.
And then right before I turned 16 until I got married when I was 19, the sex trafficking, the exploitation continued.
Wow, that's incredible. So we're speaking here to Connie Rose, who's sharing some very, very personal stories from her life as a sexual abuse victim. And so Connie, I mean, Claire and I were talking about this before the show. Where was your mother in all this?
Mm-hmm. Interesting, right? She was there. And I am a national speaker, international speaker. And so when that question will pop up from an audience member, my response is she was there. And like so many other folks that are out there that have never dealt with their own personal abuse, she came from a very abusive household. You know, in her day, my mother actually had an injunction against her father for how much he used to beat them up. Wow. And my grandmother got divorced. This little 4'8" Italian woman got divorced in the 40s. Mm-hmm. And if you do not address, and so this is it, this message is going to go out to everyone, okay? Mm-hmm. If you do not address what has ever happened to you in your childhood, in your life, because every single one of us has experienced trauma in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And here's what happens if you don't. I'm not saying, oh my goodness, now right now go through years of therapy because you have children or because you work with children. But when a child comes to you and says, someone touched me, someone makes me feel uncomfortable, someone is yelling at me, I am being bullied, and that was part of your life, what is going to happen is you might turn a blind eye, you might turn your head, because then the wounds are too deep for you.
Interesting.
That was my mother's story.
Okay, okay. So that was her way of dealing with the reality.
Yes, that was her way of not having to deal with reality.
Yeah, mm-hmm. True point. And so tell us a little bit more then about the grooming process. So I guess did you later in life realize that that was the grooming process? Or like at what point did you realize that that was the grooming process for to be prostituted?
Yeah, not until 2010. Ugly underbelly of the big game.
Yeah.
Also of any major event.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll just open it up to major events. Researching what happens, they were talking about party, young girls, party favors, being brought in, having to service several men, and the light bulb went off for me, and I really said, oh my goodness. That's my story. You mean
wow.
I was not a prostitute. I was a victim of sex trafficking, of exploitation. And then from there, I've not stopped. That is my life mission, my passion, my why, because no one should ever have to live that kind of life.
Amen.
Yeah, 100% agreed, for sure. And so did you, at the time, get to meet other victims?
I have worked with so many victims throughout the country,
yeah.
Either one-on-one.
But specifically at the time when you were actually, you know, at that age.
No, I did not.
Okay.
Nor did I know that my father had other victims.
Right. Right.
I did not find that out until 2010 when
wow.
he was on his deathbed.
Oh, Connie, was he making money off of this deal?
He was. I never saw the money. So that is one thing that I'm very grateful for, because so many survivors that I work with, as we are going through the whole transformation and walking through what's next in life, and say, here, let's do some social skills, work skills, right? Life balance skills. Here's, go interview for this job. And they look at me like, really? Do you know how much money went through my hands? I never experienced that, so I'm so grateful for that. But that's one of the hardest and most difficult challenges that we have working with survivors.
And trying to get them into the real world, basically?
Well, getting them into the real world, but also just think about for yourself. Think about it's payday, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you've got your paycheck. It's like going in the bank. You're like, oh, my goodness, I got so much money. And now cha-ching, 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 all those automatic bills are being paid,
mm-hmm.
and you have nothing left.
Mm-hmm.
So you felt it for a moment, how good that felt, and then there was nothing. So for a lot of warriors, survivors, thrivers, they've had that money exchange going through. How much, so I asked, so how'd that work for you? How much did you actually get to keep, and how much did you actually get to save?
Mm. And when they come to that, when they look back on that experience and they say, oh wait, none of it? Like, what, do you see a light bulb come off?
Sometimes you'll see a light bulb come off. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time, because here's the other thing. Nobody wants to be a victim.
Yeah.
So the hardest and most difficult that we have to work with is for someone to really get and understand that they were a victim of something, because there is so much forced fraud, coercion, right? There is, people talk about chains, like you'll see pictures and in the movies of, you know, being chained up with handcuffs and in dog cages. And yes, that happens. I don't want to take that away from anyone that experienced, but that is the smallest percentage. The prison, the chains are right here in your head. Okay. The brainwashing,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I know, Tina, you're involved in a lot of this in our local community. Can you tell the public, our listeners, about a little bit about what you do in the community for this?
Well, one of the things that, one of the many things that I do, also along with Connie, is that, you know, I really try and send the message and the emphasis and this tough talk. Mm-hmm. About human trafficking, because I'm a grandmother of five girls, so I'm very passionate about this, and I'm the vice president for the organization along with Christopher King, and this is just something that just come close to my heart, because, you know, as a child myself, you know, I was molested and that whole mm-hmm. thing up until I was 16, but it's just so much when you gain a certain amount of information, you don't keep that information for yourself. You educate people and you advise people and you try and enlighten and have those conversations that many people are not willing to have, mm-hmm. because, you know, God put that tool in your pocket or in your hand for a reason. So you have to use that to just help others. And I just adore Connie so much, because, you know, I love the way that you present it all. And I want you to kind of touch more on the familiar, I think you call it family familiar. Familiar family,
yes.
Trafficking,
mm-hmm.
or what have you, and just emphasizing on you being the girl next door, you know, you just being, you know, just a young girl that trusted your dad, you know,
right.
this is important to know, because mm-hmm. it's not necessarily always the neighbor across the street or, you know, some stranger. So, you know, if you can, just touch on that a little bit more.
Oh, absolutely. So it's called familial sex trafficking. And so let me just start with that 70 to 92% of survivors were sexually abused as a young child between the age of 3 and 5 years old, and it's usually by a family member. And so from that, you create this vulnerability, right? You create, I'm kind of the shame, the blame, I'm dirty. The grooming process had started, the vulnerability is there. Approximately 35% of all sex trafficking survivors, it's by a family member, and that's why it's called familial sex trafficking. And when I say family member, it's usually like an immediate family, and then can expand out to other members of the family. Why? That is one of the most difficult for us to work with. And here's why. Mm-hmm. It's that trust factor.
Yes.
It's the person that was supposed to take care of you.
The protector.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was your protector. Mm-hmm. And especially when it's like your dad or your mom, you know, it's the person that you've looked up to, that when you were little, maybe you cried to and they comforted you and they were there for you. And now all of a sudden you're a sex object. Now all of a sudden you're in pornographic pictures. You're in videos. You know, you're expected to have sex with strangers. Mm-hmm. But it all starts with that sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. And people go, well, how can like a dad or a mom want to sell their children to someone else? I'll speak for myself first, and then I'll speak to how it happens with other survivors. And so for myself, my father was sexually abused as a child. He was mm-hmm. raped at the age of 13 years old, and it was all over a pornographic magazine. Mm-hmm. And he said from that, he became addicted. He became addicted to pornography. He became addicted to sex. More importantly, he was not a really strong man. My mom was a very strong woman. So where did he find his control? Who could he control and have complete power over? My brother and I.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Was your brother prostituted too?
No, my brother was not. But as I said earlier, there was so much. There was physical and mental abuse mm-hmm. going on, and emotional abuse mm-hmm. in our household. And that was my brother's story. Mm-hmm. And so when we have this conversation about familial sex trafficking and the vulnerability, you know, there's a lot of reasons. So my dad, it was the power and control. For a lot of my survivor brother and sisters, a family member was addicted. Drugs, alcohol. Maybe it's generational. It's a way to pay for the rent. Mom's body is worn out. She can't be sold for sex anymore. Rented out by the hour mm-hmm. or the night. And so she will say, well, my daughter's 14 years old. Maybe even knowing her daughter's already been sexually abused or has been raped. because sexual abuse is rape. Yeah. Sex trafficking is rape over and over and over again.
And you're very much right about the perpetuation. My son has an uncle who's in life prison because when he was a young man, he was accosted. He and a group of other boys were brought into a motel room and given drugs and partied with this other man.
Right.
And now he can't stop doing it.
Right, and that happens. Right. And that's why it's so important for us to have these very, very difficult conversations.
That's true.
And it's important to have them with our children. It's important to get off the cell phones and whatever else that you're on and really sit and do that eye-to-eye contact with your children. More importantly, about there's no secrets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll just share quickly with my own children. I started telling them not about that I was prostituted, but about all the sexual abuse that I endured. Because I wanted them to know. I also wanted them to know that there was nothing they could ever do that I would never love them. And more importantly, there was nothing that they could ever not come and tell me. I was a parent first, so I might have a little bit of a kind of reaction. But then, you know, at the end of the day, we're going to sit down and we're going to talk. Because secrets create secrets. Secrets create vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And secrets create for things to happen to our children.
Wow.
Yeah, and it's also kind of, you know, important to touch on the ages. I mean, majority of them are, you know, young girls. I think it's like 12.
Well, it depends. You know, there's so much research that's out there. So the average age, they say, between 12 and 14 years old
for girls,
really focusing on that 14-year-old, and 12 years old for boys.
For boys,
because boys are being sex trafficked.
And we don't talk enough about boys.
No, we
don't. They, I mean, you would think that, hey, it's not that many boys, but it's sometimes it's more than boys, more boys than girls that are being taken. It's a very interesting historical, because it goes so way back as far as just trafficking alone, because there's trafficking as far as organs. You know, there are human trafficking organs, kidneys, hearts, and so forth. So it gets very deep. It gets very deep. But again, this is just a conversation that I think just, you know, many of us just need to have, you know? I mean, again, you know, I raised three girls. I have one son and three girls, and I was so blunt and honest with them. They looked at me like I was crazy, but I didn't care, you know?
Because I hear you.
You will walk away and say, okay, well, my mom is can't say my mom didn't tell me.
Right.
You know, but it's like I had to be brutally honest and just use what I went through. So, you know, much like what you're doing, Connie.
Right.
So that's why I could just commend you so for just standing up for this.
Thank you. And here's, if I really quick, here's the thing. Parents, you have to tell, you have to teach your children what their body parts are, what the real
It's not a pocketbook. Mm-hmm.
No, it's not a pocketbook. It's not these cute little names.
No,
because you're uncomfortable. Because if you don't, I've worked and have spoken to some pimps. If you don't, they're going to step right in because they know that you didn't.
Yeah.
Interesting. And so, wow, so much to unpack here. Again, it's a very deep conversation we're having here with Connie and Tina and Claire and myself in the studio here this morning. You're listening to The Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. If you want to participate in this conversation, if you have your own experiences that you'd be willing to share with us over the air, please call us at 813-239-9663. And I think it's important also, one, that you started off with saying, you're from Tampa. You grew up in Tampa. Mm-hmm. You grew up in a middle-class family. You know, you had this, you know, quote-unquote American, typical American
girl next door
upbringing, right? And so most people think of it under, you did mention about the economics of it, right? Mm-hmm. That can be part of the perpetuation of this, right?
Right.
And so I need to pay the mortgage. I need to pay the rent. And so I can't prostitute myself, so I'm going to prostitute my child. And so, but in your case, was there no financial, in their case you're saying your father, it was a control situation, a psychological issue with your father, where he just felt empowered by doing this. Is that
right? It was totally a control thing for him.
Got it.
And he was paid money. Right. I just never saw the exchange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But did you think there was a need for your family? Like, was there an economic need that you were unaware
Not
of?
Not that I knew of.
Got it.
My mom worked. My dad worked.
Yeah.
My dad knew how to fix motorcycles and would sell them on the side. So I never saw that there was an economic need. Now, if there was, my brother and I were not privy
to that.
Yeah.
And you did indicate that you were in pageants and so forth.
Yeah, I was in beauty pageants.
Yeah, and you know, that cost money for them dresses. I'm just saying.
Well, actually, I made my own dresses.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we need to talk later.
Yeah. But yes. Not so much. I don't know about now. But my son is a men's fashion designer. Maybe he got that for me.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. But then the vast majority, in your experience, mm-hmm. ever since you've become an advocate against this, in your experience, the vast majority of those children who are prostituted or are victims of sexual abuse, it come from these economic situations. Is that fair to say?
No, and here's why, and there's going to be some folks that are going to be out there, they're going to be really upset with me.
That's good.
Because when we talk, they always want to have these conversations that, yes, our foster children are extremely vulnerable. Extremely.
Yes,
because why
are
they in foster care? Look what might have happened.
Exactly.
Okay? Mm. However, traveling the country and working with thousands of survivors and organizations and speaking with them and interacting and training, I cannot tell you how many survivors that have come to me, and that was not the situation.
Yeah.
The situation was they were living at home. It was a family member that prostituted them out, and they came from every walk of life.
Mm-hmm. That's
yeah,
true.
That's why you can't really put your finger on it. You just can't, you know, and it affects all of us directly and indirectly, you know. And all of you guys that haven't caught Connie, her TED Talk. Now, I'm just going to show my blonde moments for a moment, but I didn't know they had TED Talk in Ocala. Which
yes, they do.
Yeah, so you did an excellent job with the TED Talk. So definitely, you know, if you guys get a chance to check Connie Rose's TED Talk out, that would be an excellent way of getting more information.
Thank you.
You can just go to your favorite search engine and type in Connie Rose TEDx, and it should pop up pretty much immediately. It is a very powerful, and you did a fantastic job.
Oh, my gosh.
And,
yes.
And please share it with other people also if they haven't heard this show. And share this show when you...
We'll have to put the link on Facebook,
definitely.
Too.
Yes. Okay. Definitely. So, this is important. It affects probably every family.
Everyone.
Yeah, for sure.
In one way or another. And it does. And that's the other thing that we have to remember. You don't necessarily know what's going on next door. For all you know, next door could be a brothel, so to speak, because that's what everybody understands that terminology. Mm-hmm. Or it is a child and the nightmare that is happening to them. Because here's the thing. In today's world, you do not have to necessarily leave the house to be prostituted.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And so we do have a caller. Let's go to our caller this morning. Caller, we don't have anybody screening calls. So when you come on air, please state your name and where you're calling from. Good morning, caller.
My name is Shirley, and I'm from Tampa.
Hello. Good morning. How you doing?
Yes, good morning. I'm so pleased to hear this information being broadcast because it's such a hidden thing. When I was growing up, it was hidden so much that it was just internalized that this is how it is for me as a kid. And then when I found out about it, I wanted to know, from Connie, how did you approach the father or the family member and tell them to stop? And legally, I think my mother told me, do you want me to call the police? And I said, oh, no, I don't want to get anybody in trouble. But it's like I needed an advocate, but I didn't have one. And now that was years and years ago. And now today, it's like I'm still having issues with it, although I've talked to a counselor. But I just felt that while it was going on, I was just so naive. But I guess that's normal. But what could children do to help themselves, really, at that age? Was there anything? What age were you when you were able to tell them to stop and figure all this out?
Well, I was 14 years old the very first time that I found the words to tell my mother. Mm-hmm. And it all had to do actually with my partner today. I dated a very nice young man when I was 14 and he was 16. And we were kissing one day and all these feelings were coming up. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is the same stuff that came up with my father. And he said, you need to go in and tell your mom. And I did. I shared earlier that my mother never dealt with her own abuse, so she did what any Italian woman would do. Mom jumped up and down and yelled and screamed, but in her mind, she really believed that if she told him to stop, he would stop. And of course, that did not happen. It actually escalated. But that was the first time that I found my voice. From there, this is what I'm going to say. Parents, if you don't listen to your children, you keep telling and telling and telling until someone listens and someone believes you. Because here is the thing. Yeah, there might be a few times that children will make up something. It's usually because there's an adult behind them pushing them to make up a story. But most of the time when children talk about someone touching them, sexually abusing them, maybe even describing in detail body parts and incidents, where do children get this from?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Now, in today's world, you can say, because look at everything that's on TV.
Yes.
All over media. Mm-hmm. Yes, I will agree with that. But still, at the end of the day, children do not come up. And to find the courage to be able to say, this is happening to me, is powerful. So I always say, believe. Believe them. Let them talk it through. Encourage children. And actually, not just children. Because I know that for you to call and have this conversation with us right now had to be very, very difficult for you. And I want to commend you, and
yes,
I want to tell
yes.
you, thank you, because you have found your voice. You don't realize it maybe and believe it, but I feel it. And you have found your voice, and that is the first step of healing.
Thank you so much. That's
Sherry,
a great question.
Thank you so much.
I wanted to mention another thing, though. When I did have a voice, which was a very little voice, I did tell my mom, and then I noticed my dad told the rest of the family I was lying, and everybody didn't. Nobody wanted to hear it, and so that shut me up.
Wow.
Remember that a lot of families don't accept it for some reason. And
right.
I guess
it's like they're protecting
not many
some secret or something.
Yeah. So that was really scary.
And you're not alone in that conversation.
No, that's true.
I hear that over and over and over again. That is why we have hundreds and thousands of children in the United States that run away from home and are living on the streets, and they are homeless.
Yep.
Yeah.
For that very reason.
To this day, I'm a black sheep.
Wow.
To this day.
I get you. I hear you on that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To this day, she's
that's
a what?
Weird.
A black sheep.
You're
she's the black sheep.
I'm going to need you to focus, okay?
That's it's because somebody molested me. I mean, really?
Right.
Hello.
Well, let's also talk about this for a moment for you. Okay, there is no shame. There's no blame for you. Okay? If your family cannot deal with it, that is their problem. That is their issue. I'm not going to say it still doesn't hurt because I know that feeling. I have been there. However, you keep talking and you know what happened. Mm-hmm. And so believe in yourself, because that is their issue. That is their problem. What my hope is that you don't experience what I experienced to find out how many other victims there were because he was not stopped.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. It empowers me to hear what you're saying.
Oh, you're welcome. Radio. You're welcome.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. Thank you so much. And...
This is why we have these conversations on the Urban Cafe, because we want our listeners to feel empowered and participate in the conversation. And Sherry, thank you so much for calling in and being, to Connie's point, brave enough to come out here and talk to us about it.
Yeah, sharing her voice.
Yeah, for sure. And so we're having a wonderful conversation about sexual abuse and human trafficking and prostitution, and very timely, especially with what's going on down south in South Florida.
Yes, yes.
With the Martin County spa.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to go ahead. Go ahead and call us at 813-239-9663. And we're going to go to a break. And then when we come back, we'll continue our conversation here.
Excellent.
Great.
It is commonplace to see kids, little kids. If you ask most little kids, for me, that means before middle school, what do you want to be when you grow up? To a kid, they almost all say doctors or scientists. Like, almost all of them say they want to be a pediatrician, some sort of neuroscientist, or some sort of criminologist, or some sort of scientist. Why are there so few then? If so many people grow up wanting this, why are there so few? It's because the way our system is designed, it doesn't train people in the sciences. And as a result, we have almost none. That's why we keep importing scientists from all over the world.
Right. You're saying, what you're saying, in fact, is that our system hasn't caught up with the realities of today's demand.
No.
Not even trying. Not even trying. Not even interested in it.
WMNF can be everywhere you are. Get your free WMNF app in the Apple or Android store. 4 channels, plus playlists, archives, news and events, donate, and more. Or tell your smart speaker to play WMNF.
Play WMNF now.
Thanks for listening to 88.5 FM WMNF, the last local radio.
The last local radio.
Hi, this is Angela B. We're back again. The March 23rd Caribbean Cruise Music Festival takes place at Skipper Smokehouse, Saturday, March the 23rd. Live bands include Impulse, Renegade, Jafarai, Trinity 7, Sucker Boys, Spy vs. Spy, Terry Edwards and the Latin Jazz Band, Tassa Drums, African Dancers, Bickley Rivera and Nelson with Island Chill.
Everybody wondering what the world's coming to.
Ghana, Renegade, Gia, Wayne Stutter, Soka Van, The Man, DJ Spice will be our DJ. See you there, 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 there on the 23rd of March, 2019 at Skipper's Smokehouse. The doors open at 3 p.m. For more information, go online to WMNF.org or call us here at 813-238-8001.
Welcome back.
Welcome back to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5, your last local community radio station. You're listening to Connie Rose talk about a very, very empowering just experience that she had as a victim of sexual abuse when she was basically a child all the way through her teenage years, victim of being prostituted by her own father. So I wanted to talk to you, Connie, about when in 2008 you had a come to Jesus moment, so to speak, with your father, right? So what were the circumstances about getting to that point in 2008, and then what happened? What was that conversation like?
So in 2008, my father was very ill. As a matter of fact, he was on his deathbed. And my brother asked me to go to the hospital because he did not have the courage to tell them, basically, to pull the plug. My father heard my voice. He started grunting. Make a long story short, he lived 9 more months. And so I actually made a decision that I needed to know who this man was, because I knew that he had several victims that I was not. The only one, he had already been arrested in 1988 for my stepsisters for sexually abusing them. And so once a week, I would meet with him to find out who he was and what happened. And that's how I found out about him being raped at the age of 13 years old. That's also when I found out that he had a young girl living with him that he was prostituting out because she was addicted to drugs. And he took drugs. And so he would drive her to wherever she needed to go. And so he was still continuing in this pattern. Now, at that time, I didn't put two to two together that I was being sex trafficked in 2008, because I was just starting to learn about human trafficking and sex trafficking and all of that. So our conversations were really about, who was he? Why did he do this? What was that control and power? What was that about being addicted to pornography and to such an extent? Now, he did pass away November 2nd, 2008, which is my birthday. And I will say, so that was like a rebirthing for me. So instead of coming to Jesus moment, right?
Yeah.
That was his gift, basically, to me, was on my birthday.
Interesting.
I mean, that's how I have chosen.
Right. Yeah.
But I was very fortunate, because some of the conversations that we had throughout the 9 months that he lived, I went through the whole forgiveness process, which I had done several times before. But this time I was one-on-one, face-to-face with this man that basically stole my entire childhood.
Right.
Yeah. Wow. And forgiveness was not about him.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about me. Because that's how I can do what I do today.
Yeah.
Is because I know that I can walk around without the shame, without the guilt, without blaming myself, because I was a child that was perpetrated on.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very valid point. For example, I'm reading this news about what's going on with the massage parlor,
yes,
or the spa down in Martin County, mm-hmm, where, you know, all of us know that Robert Kraft has been involved in, or, you know, allegedly. And so, and one of the things that stands out to me is, like, there's been 6 women arrested.
Right.
Right? And so, but they're the victims.
Exactly.
But they're the ones getting arrested. And so I don't understand that.
Yeah, please repeat that. Just repeat that one more time.
Yeah, and so I just don't understand how that works. I know that's how our legal system works,
yes,
right? And I wish Jamal was here because so he could talk more about that point possibly.
Mm-hmm.
But tell us about that part where do the victims feel betrayed by society when they're the ones who are finger pointed saying, you're the prostitute, you know, it's your fault. You know, can you tell me a little bit about possibly about that and,
sure,
with the other victims that you've worked with, how does that
How does that all play out?
Yeah.
First, let me first do a shout out to law enforcement.
Yeah.
Okay, because there are some great law enforcement,
yes,
out there that they do not arrest the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And if they do make an arrest, okay, for being prostitute or for prostitution, it might be because there is no safe place for the victim to go,
okay,
whether it's an adult,
mm-hmm,
or a child. So I want to make that really clear.
Yeah.
And then when that does happen, there are programs, there's organizations that are out there that can come in and start working with the survivors to help build that trust,
mm-hmm,
so that when there is a bed or a program open, they can transition. So I want to do a really great shout out because there is law enforcement that is doing incredible work.
Mm-hmm.
But like anything, then you have folks, you know what? At the end of the day, people believe if you are getting money for having sex, it is your problem. It is your choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Children cannot make that choice. Children cannot consent to sex. The massage parlor incident. They're arresting this woman because they feel that there's another cause and another reason to be arresting them. They were just basically found because of the massage parlor incident. But let's talk about that for one moment. These are women that came from China.
Mm-hmm.
They came over legally. They had visas to,
yep,
work in the United States. Let's talk about what's going on a little bit. I'm not going to really, mm-hmm, get into politics, but they came over legally,
mm-hmm,
not through a wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we have a big issue in Tampa with massage parlors.
Huge.
Huge.
Yes.
You know, and not just massage parlors, strip clubs.
Huge.
We have more strip clubs in Tampa per capita than we have McDonald's. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, I've always anecdotally heard that more strip clubs,
oh,
more gentlemen's clubs.
Gentlemen's clubs.
I put that in quotes.
Right, exactly.
Gentlemen clubs in quotes per square mile than anywhere else in the country.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right? That was one of my shockers when I moved here from New York. I was like, wow, they have a lot of strip joints up in here.
And you're saying a lot of these are just a facade for trafficking and other things like that?
Yes, several of them are, but I also want to be really mindful. There are some folks that will work in strip clubs and they are not being trafficked. They,
mm-hmm,
are not drug addicts.
Yeah.
I really want people to be mindful of that. However, the majority of mainly women, okay, are young girls that say that they're legal, right? They have false IDs. They are. They're being. One of the largest cases that we had here actually was for a gentleman. Same trailer park that my father took the girl that he had living with him.
Wow.
And it was one of the largest federal cases that we had here. And he would go to strip clubs and have women be addicted to Oxy.
Mm.
And the addiction was, mm-hmm, so intense that they couldn't go an hour without having to have their next hit. So,
wow,
anything that he told them to do, they did.
They was, mm-hmm, doing,
because,
yeah,
that was his control. That was his power.
Wow. One of the things about the caller earlier, we were talking about children.
Cheryl.
What can children say, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think also a lot of it is the hidden. Are there hidden body language cues that parents or other adults should be looking at from a child? Like, you know, if they don't verbally say something,
mm-hmm,
is there something in their behavior?